Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. At the very beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, the lion's share of victims were senior citizens, considered the most vulnerable. Now, however, we're seeing the very young stricken with strange symptoms linked to the coronavirus. Just last week, Maryland marked the death of its first child, a 15-year-old, from a COVID-19-related illness. Tonight, we take a look at how this disease is impacting our children and what parents can do to protect them. My guests are Dr. Marilyn Corder, adjunct professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Howard University Hospital. Also, Dr. Charles Barul, chief of cardiology at Children's National Hospital. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question about this very important issue. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Barul, Dr. Corder, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Barul, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks for having me as well.
Absolutely. Dr. Barul, let me start with you, since you are really kind of, you know, at the epicenter of where child treatment is. What are you seeing at the hospital right now?
Well, thank you. We've been surprised at how this disease has sort of sprung about, because it's occurring really 3 or 4 weeks after the peak of COVID-19 infections and hospitalizations in the general public, mostly adults. And all of a sudden, over the past couple of weeks, we've seen now 30 children with this new disease, which is being called multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, or MISC. It's had a couple of different names, but that's the current acronym is MISC. And, you know, if you talked to me 2 weeks ago, we would have said we've only had three children hospitalized at Children's National with it. And now we have 30 that have come up over just the past 10 days or so. So it's really becoming quite a large number, although in the scheme of things, this is still a rare illness.
Certainly. And obviously, one sick child is one sick child too many. I'm sure we will all agree with that. Dr. Corder, from your perspective, can you kind of give me a thumbnail sketch of what the symptoms are for children with this disease? And we are absolutely sure that these are related to COVID-19. Is that correct?
Absolutely. When you follow the studies from Italy, even to New York and New Jersey, up to 93% of the children with these symptoms have displayed positive COVID antigens or antibodies. So that's the common denominator. What's frightening, though, is that there is, I call it the great masquerader, in terms of you have abdominal pain, diarrhea, vomiting, a rash, enlarged neck glands. Now, the two other symptoms we don't commonly see in viruses, such as flu, red eyes, and swollen hands and feet. But sometimes those can be, they may not present itself, and you may not appreciate it when we're talking on the phone. And, of course, you know, this is telemedicine time. You know, this is when you're not, your office is not open as it ordinarily would be doing for sickness. So one of the things over the past 40 years of practice in medicine here in the DMV, I always tell folks, you know, when you have a fever, make sure after another day or two that we address the fever to make sure we know what's going on. Certainly viruses cause a fever, but you want to know what the related other things that are going along with this fever. So just like your guest said, Dr. Barul said, it's something that rises its head 2 to 3 weeks later. So we just have to make sure that we are aware that we recognize it when we can, as soon as we can, because there's a window of opportunity to treat, because it's a vasculitis, and that's just, we call it inflammation of all of the organs and particularly the arteries. Mm-hmm. And we know that the arteries are around every place, including the heart. So, you know, there are things that we have to do to make sure that that heart condition that's pending is eradicated, is reversed.
Dr. Barul, talk to me a little bit more about how this virus impacts the heart, particularly in children, and how are the children being treated?
Great. Yeah, so Dr. Quarter got it, hit it right on the head. It's a vasculitis affecting the arteries, as she said, and the crucial thing is to get diagnosed early and treated early, just as she said. So if you've got a fever and that constellation of symptoms that she just described, including some of those unusual ones like swollen or cracked hands and fingertips or cracked lips with a, what they call a strawberry tongue, and the redness in injected eyes. Those are unusual constellation of symptoms that go along with fever. And those children should see their primary caretaker, their pediatrician, as soon as possible. And likely we are going to get referred to a children's emergency room to get fully evaluated. When they see the cardiologist, basically we're evaluating the arteries of the heart and the function of the heart. So the two ways it can affect it is to cause some dilation or aneurysms of the coronary arteries. And those can be serious if not treated and can actually lead to a heart attack if not treated. And the other is it can cause the heart to not squeeze as well, what we call myocardial dysfunction. So those are the two scary things that can occur. Fortunately, with prompt treatment, the children are doing really well. And we of the 30 children we've treated so far at Children's Hospital, all have survived and are doing well after treatment.
I want to talk a little bit more about that treatment, but I want to go to the phone lines. We already have a listener on the line who has a child who is stricken with COVID-19. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Audrey, calling from District Heights. Audrey, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I just wanted to share my story. Dr. Quarter is my son's primary care physician, and at the tender age of 4 months old, he was diagnosed with Kawasaki's disease, and he was very lethargic, and he had a lot of the symptoms that the doctors are describing now, but I'm calling because I want parents to be very, very aware of what to look for in their child when they, if they contract this disease, because I immediately called Dr. Quarter, and she immediately diagnosed, you know, basically what it was and had me go take him straight to Children's Hospital where he was admitted and given a special medication to help him to, you know, control the virus. But it's very important that parents get right on this right away because it could be very detrimental to their child later on in life.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Quarter, what is Kawasaki's disease?
You know, it's interesting that even the name. Well, it was diagnosed in Asia, and what happens is that I call it your whole body's on fire. When I say on fire, you have inflammation from the actual eyes being red, the mouth, the inside of your mouth, the mucosal membrane, your hands and feet, and you have lymphadenopathy. Now, often we see big glands on both sides if you have like a strep throat. But this is significant. It's usually unilateral, one side, and those eyes are injected. And as those eyes are injected, you have tons of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
And yes.
So,
Go ahead.
And then the fever itself gives you, to me, it kind of gives you the actual, this is what's going on, something beyond roseola, something beyond the viruses that we tend to see in children. And again, it's very important to look at the hands, to see. My concern is that we have many people who've never seen Kawasaki, and we want to make sure that that's high on the differential, on the list of things to look out for, because it's not so common. Ordinarily, we might see two or three a year in my practice, but we're looking and tracking New Jersey and New York, and they're seeing like 30-fold increase. And so we want to make sure that, again, with us not being able to visualize as well when we're telemedicine, that we make sure that we send those patients to the hospital right away to make sure that they get proper treatment and timely treatment, as Dr. Berule said.
Dr. Berule, you mentioned before we took the phone call, and I also do want to, let me say, I want to thank the caller, Audrey, for sharing with us And we certainly hope that that your youngster continues to improve in health. Dr. Barul, you mentioned treatment. When we hear about COVID-19 for adults, we hear that obviously there is no vaccine, there is no cure. So how are children being treated who have these related symptoms?
Right. The MIFC, as the caller astutely pointed out, is very similar to Kawasaki disease. The signs and symptoms look the same. And she was lucky to have an excellent pediatrician in Dr. Quarter. And that's the main thing, is to make the diagnosis early. And so like Kawasaki disease, we're treating it with very strong anti-inflammatory drugs. And the main one is something called intravenous gamma globulin. It's basically an IV drug that's natural in the body. Gamma globulin is an immune agent to decrease the inflammation throughout the body. And we also treat them with high-dose aspirin, very high-dose aspirin, as an anti-inflammatory. And that's how we treat Kawasaki disease, and that's how we're treating this MIFC. And interestingly, they're responding the same. So it looks like Kawasaki disease, and it's responding to the treatment just like Kawasaki disease does. And fortunately, the heart issues, the coronary artery aneurysms, get better after that treatment combination with the IV gamma globulin and the oral high-dose aspirin. And it's great to see that we're seeing an excellent response if they're treated early.
Do you have any idea why children are presenting differently than adults? Because, and there is a treatment for this COVID-19 related illness similar to Kawasaki disease, but yet there is no treatment for adults. Is it the youth? Is it the immune system? What do you think it is?
Yeah, you hit it on the head.
You hit it, yes.
And the way you said it was very accurate, because you're not treating the COVID. You're treating the immune response to the COVID that the kids are getting. They've got to recover from the COVID infection first. And fortunately, kids are doing really well. The vast majority of them with COVID respiratory infections recover from that. But then a few weeks later, some of them are getting this MIFC as a reaction, as an autoimmune reaction to the COVID infection, or even just to exposure to maybe a parent had COVID and recovered, and now the kids are getting MIFC as a response, an autoimmune response to their parents' infection.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the coronavirus and our children, what's happening with them, how best to protect them. We are taking your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, as always, we will be taking these phone calls even after 7:30. Let's go to Iman calling from D.C. Iman, thanks for calling. Did we lose Iman? Unfortunately, Iman, give us a call back if you can. Again, lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So initially, Dr. Quarter, as I opened the program and I said that the most vulnerable were our senior citizens and then, of course, people with underlying conditions.
Right. With comorbidities.
Exactly. And so are there clues in how children are dealing with this that may suggest something in treating this for adults?
Well, you know, one thing that I think that we need to also talk about, and that's with the caller, Dr. Barul, children have an interesting, I call it the hypersensitivity immune system anyway. And with that and seeing that, this is after the fact, but their body is still hyped up to make sure that whatever it was, the body is still on guard. It is not the respiratory part as well. And going back, you know, it's one of the things, it's two different illnesses. This is what we call post-illness response versus active illness response. So the COVID antigen itself is not what's causing the symptomatology, because often they're asymptomatic. But it's after the fact when the body is, like I said, just inflammation everywhere. And that's why we're calling it multisystem inflammatory disease.
I see. I only have about a minute left before we take a break. Dr. Barul, any final thoughts from you? Because I know we're going to lose you at 7:30. Any final thoughts from you about how parents should be looking at this issue for their children?
Yeah, I think if they have concerns about this, if their kids have a combination of these symptoms, they should, you know, talk to their pediatrician, their primary caretaker, as soon as possible, and don't delay. And don't be afraid to go to the hospital. I know a lot of people, there's been things on the news about parents being afraid to take their kids to the hospital for, you know, or to their pediatricians even for well child care and vaccines. It's important to continue to care for your children. And if you think you have a child with these symptoms, to don't delay, talk to your pediatrician, and go to the hospital promptly to get evaluated.
Okay. Absolutely. Dr. Barul, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and continue your best work over at Children's National Hospital. We really appreciate your time, sir. We have more of this issue coming up on SiriusXM Channel 141. That includes a conversation with Iman. Thank you for calling back. We're going to talk to you in just a bit. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Children and the coronavirus, what parents need to know. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. This conversation will continue in 15 seconds. The original Quiet Storm on WHUR 96.3. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about children and the coronavirus, what parents need to know. We continue our discussion tonight with Dr. Marilyn Corder. She is an adjunct professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Howard University Hospital. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you have a concern about the health and welfare of your children in this difficult time of the COVID-19 pandemic, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Iman, thank you for calling. Let's get back to your call. What's on your mind?
Yes, given the backdrop of all of the new pandemic 19, et cetera.
Yes, sir.
Something is being fought in San Francisco, New Orleans, New York, and let's say Washington, D.C., and now you say it's our children. Given the origin that Dr. Fauci had related that the wet market must stop, many are relating it to a black market, but now it comes down to our children and the bacteria that the origin of this thing, sending our numbers in surprisingly record time from a report that comes to my desk, from 0 to 1,000, and now from 1,000 to nearly 50,000 in record time, and I mean from 30 to 60 days, these numbers have come upon black people, and the impact on the black family is, I think, more or less my concern as an imam and a student of the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, the New Black Panther Party, and other activists that are asking for sanctions on these things. But we're inquisitive to know directly to you, the doctors that are on board, about these bacteria, the numbers, and their origin. Could we have been the target of this exploit, say, all the time? Is there a possibility that it could have been targeted?
Okay.
Or is this a natural phenomenon?
Well,
go right ahead, Dr. Corder.
Yes. All right. So we've heard lots of different stories and theories, and I understand why you're asking that question. I'm in communication often with Dr. Ali Muhammad, and we've been in discussion. And one of the things that we find with people of color, African Americans, we also know that there are certain things that are in our makeup, not just the stressors and the comorbidities, but it's also vitamin D. And this may sound, you know, odd, but vitamin D also makes your immune system weak, but also makes your vascular system weak. So when we're looking at what we need to do as a people, we need to make sure that we are clear of where we are in terms of deficiencies, such as vitamin D deficiency. So there's some natural things that we can do. We talk about zinc. We talk about vitamin D D, we talk about different things that vitamin C, we can increase our supply in our body to fight off. But you have folks of all colors, Don, we disproportionately are affected. But, you know, many comorbidities we see disproportionately. So this is just added to the list in terms of our response. Now, with the children, the COVID-19, the multisystemic inflammation, we're not seeing most of people of children of color. We're seeing children. So, and we have had some deaths here in the DMV, in Virginia, as well as Maryland. Thankfully, none in D.C., but in the region, and these are not children of color, as well as we look at the amount and the percentage. So for those out there who can hear me, make sure you get your vitamin D up, make sure you hand wash, do all of the distances, social distancing, as well as keeping yourself safe and balanced.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Iman, thank you so much for your phone call.
One other thing.
Okay, go ahead.
The two dynamics in Washington, D.C., the question based around is, are we fighting the same thing here in San Francisco, New Orleans, New York, and Washington? Interferon is introduced with Dr. Abdul Aleem, and there's a black sister in the Informer newspaper saying that she, in her a lab student, that may have come up with something. I don't know if it came on your desk, and we just want to look at the idea of remedies, cures, mm-hmm. et cetera.
And
are we trying to cure the same thing in all of the cities? Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'll just say that the FDA, of course, has to have their hand in it as well. But I'm very familiar with interferon. I understand even with the doctors in Cuba as they went to China as well as some of the information. But stay tuned.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Iman. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Walter Faget, calling from D.C. Dr. Faget, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Dr. Faget, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Yeah. I want to thank Dr. Corder for healing the village, as she always does. But I had a specific question. I had a 10-year-old had trouble walking. It looks like a Guillain-Barré. And I understand that has been associated with the pediatric inflammatory problem as well. I didn't know if your consultants,
yes,
if you'd seen that, and if it is something to look for.
Help us with that term, Dr. Corder, if you can.
Yes. It's called Guillain-Barré. And what it is, it's a neurological disorder. It's caused by viruses, which it's like a weakness. And you have a child who ordinarily had been healthy, but it's the inflammation of the neurological system, which makes them weak. So absolutely. And thank you, Dr. Walter Faget, because you and I have discussed different cases that we're seeing from COVID, not just the Kawasaki, but some unique ones, and that's one of them.
Okay. Dr. Faget, thank you so much for participating in this conversation. I want to talk a little bit specifically about that, because he mentioned a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. A lot of the children that we've been talking about are very, very young. But now, when we're talking about a 10-year-old, for example, a pre-adolescent,
yes,
and that symptom of severe weakness, not being able to walk. We had a sister on our program just last week who is recovering from the coronavirus. She is over 50, and she was talking about the very first issue when it hit her was severe weakness and inability to walk. So is that something else that we need to be aware of in children that are prepubescent or those who are, you know, teenagers, such as the young lady from Baltimore who died a week or so ago, the 15-year-old.
Right. And, you know, you bring up a good point. It's like we're looking at an overlap. We're looking at the younger children with the Kawasaki, the fever, you know, the vasculitis, the rash. But now as we get to the tweens or the children almost in teenagers, that we begin to see something a little different, something with the weakness, with the not just the vasculitis, but also the neurological, because you have folks who are so lethargic and so malaise and almost to the point they're incoherent. So not just the neurons in the brain, but also those that affect your limbs. So it's different phases, and that is why I call it the great masquerader, because I'm telling everybody, nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs, physicians, make sure you still think COVID, no matter what type of symptoms, because we're still learning. It's called a very brand new, we're learning, it's novel, we're learning as we go on the fly how this presents.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Something Dr. Barul mentioned before the break, and I think this is so important because we are hearing some of our elected officials talk about this. Governor Ralph Northam from Virginia mentioned this several weeks ago about parents afraid to have children get their immunization shots, you know, particularly the really, really young children. And he said, we don't want to see another pandemic of, you know, measles, rubella, and the like, because parents are afraid of taking their children in. Can you kind of talk to me a little bit about that, please?
For sure, for sure. We do not want to see a resurgence of vaccine-preventable illnesses. One thing that I have done, I have reopened. I was down for 2 weeks, but I'm opened up for just newborns and those infants, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, and the 12-month, the ones that need vaccines. The 12-month vaccine, the one-year-old vaccine, is the measles, mumps, rubella. Of course, the pertussis is 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months. So one of the things I pride myself on is being open for vaccines. Now, a 5 or 6-year-old who's not due a vaccine, we're like, you know, that's just a regular annual physical. As long as he or she is fine, you know, we can push that back. But the vaccinations are so very important. And we just came out of a resurgence of measles. So that's something that I pride myself not having contributed to another one coming up. But, yes, your vaccines, if you're seeing a doctor and they're not yet open or you need your vaccines, what you can do is call some of the clinics, et cetera, because we're still open in private practitioners to make sure that, you know, even if your primary care is not open, that you still get the vaccinations, because now we have what we call a universal vaccine index that you can pull up and see what vaccines your child is needed, no matter where they go.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the care of our children in the midst of this pandemic, because again, in the very beginning, they were the medical experts from the CDC, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and some of the other infectious disease experts were saying that many young people, particularly children, would be asymptomatic but could possibly infect more vulnerable populations. And so how do you protect your children while you're trying to protect yourself and everyone else? If they're asymptomatic, do you still take their temperature? What, can you give me the rundown for that?
Yes, it's almost like keeping three balls in the air at the same time.
Yes, ma'am.
So you want to make sure that you do have a good thermometer. I'm going to talk basics. And that you're making sure that the child, whomever it is hydrating. And you want to, you know, monitor their activity. Now, keeping them protected, what we usually will say is try to stay within that same household, be it 2 members, 4 members, because, you know, some people say, well, I want to take the child here and there, but you don't know what is lingering in that next household or next 2 to 3 households. Now, I'm very concerned because daycares are opening up and different places are opening up, and I'm talking to parents all day long about, you know, what should they do, and even those who are not compromised, because it's very important. And people are saying, well, should we go visit grandma, you know, and grandfather has this, a pacemaker, or has, you know, whatever condition. And it's a conversation, and we're always talking it and individualizing it. But in the end, Harold, you just want to make sure that, number one, you're listening and watching and observing and staying in contact with your primary care and taking the temperatures and making sure if anything is unusual from activity on that you get on the phone.
But it's very difficult, particularly with, you know, young children. Those are just kind of getting their legs up under them in the 3- and 4-year-old and even the 5-year-old range. Children are curious. They are exploring, and it's difficult enough for adults not to be comfortable with social distancing and masks and gloves and all of that. But with children, this is one more thing that a parent has to tell a child that they cannot do. And this is just really, it has to be, you know, perplexing and bewildering for children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we have discussions of, you know, there are some bad germs and we want to make sure you're protected, and we're putting the mask on their favorite teddy bear, you know, their favorite different place. And we're taking pictures of the mask so that it's, because it's frightening initially. So it's, we plan that we don't want to spread our germs and don't want to get germs. And that's the most, depending upon what age they are, to receive and accept the information. So they're not so afraid. So they understand this is, you know, hand washing is important, not sharing your sippy cup and, you know, of the like, in terms of trying to keep the germ level and the spread down to zero.
I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what parents need to do to protect their children against the COVID-19 disease, and just kind of, we're going to need to walk parents through this, because even, you know, as the parent of an adult child, you know, it still gives me pause in trying to figure out how to navigate this new normal. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. We continue our look at how the coronavirus is impacting our children. My guest is Dr. Marilyn Corder, adjunct professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Howard University Hospital. Dr. Corder, we've been talking about, for the most part, very young children. But as a pediatrician, you see children who are moving beyond the early childhood stages, even beyond puberty and into adulthood. What have you seen as we discuss this disease for the teens and those getting closer to adulthood?
Well, that's also the age where there's this attitude of, it's not going to happen to me, you know, that's someone else's problem. And sometimes I feel that the toddlers are easier to control than the teens because of that. And you want to make sure that you regularly wash your hands, number one. Number two, you want to also make sure that they do still distance themselves from others. Now that things are reopening, you want them still to avoid going to crowded places. You know, I saw pictures just this weekend of folks who, the teenagers and the young adults, who you would not have thought we were in a pandemic. And that's dangerous. And I just think we need to continue to repeat and say and emphasize one thing, that we're wearing the mask for others to make sure that we protect them, but also to protect ourselves from ourselves, Harold, because many people are putting their hands in their face all of the time and not realizing it. So the nose, the mouth, the eyes, et cetera. And those are entries to this virus.
So, to that point, as it relates to young people, we would all hope that our teenagers would do what their parents tell them to do. We all know that they don't always do that. And so, when you have teenagers who, during the shutdowns, who are staying home, but now that they've become antsy and now they just decide they want to go out and leave and then, you know, come back home, short of a spanking, what do you, you know, how should you protect yourself from from children, and I say that partially in jest, but I think I've had anecdotally speaking, I've heard stories of young people who are like, mom, dad, I'm tired of this, I need to go see my friends, and boom, they're out, and then they come back, you don't know where they are. Parents are trying to do their own version of contact tracing. How do you address that?
I know. It's almost like, okay, do you quarantine them for 14 days because they went to a party or went to someplace and we knew that their guard was down? You know, Harold, you want to make sure, one thing I tell folks, yeah, you can have asymptomatic carriers anyway, all the time, everywhere, and you want to try to emphasize when they come back, you want to ask, okay, where did you go? Where did you do? Did you go and, were you hanging out? Did you drink? Did you, was it a whole lot of people? And were you even intimate? Because all of that is exposure. And, you don't want to let them stay out on the porch for a week, but at the same time, you want to, be very responsible in your conversation and have them be accountable. And still, it's called universal precaution. And if that means that you can't, hug up on that youngster, that teenager who's been out for a day or two, then that's what it means, because you have to also monitor them as well as monitor yourself. So it's a new normal. Now, of course, we know there's thousands or a million plus, 1.5 million that have had it and did okay. But then we still have 100,000 who died. So you also want to make sure that whomever is in your circle, your family's circle, immediate family, then monitoring their symptoms, if they have any symptoms, be it fever, be it the taste buds, they may not have a taste, they may not have smell, they may have a sore throat, even before you hear about the respiratory symptomatology in terms of pneumonia, and act on it. And don't just say, oh, it's only allergies. That's important to understand. This is allergy season, but it's also pandemic season.
So how do you know the difference between allergies and COVID-19? I'm no kid, but my allergies have been wreaking havoc with me just this past weekend, but I went through the same thing last year. So how would a parent who has a child who is going through allergy issues know the difference?
Well, and you just made a good point, Harold. There's a allergy where you're snotting and sneezing, et cetera, but you're still kind of active. Your eyes a little puffy, but you're still running around. The kid is still running and jumping, but sneezing and, snotting and wiping that nose. But then you have the congestion, the cough, the sneeze that looks like allergy, maybe not even as much as a sneeze, but you're a little lethargic. They're in the bed more, and that's a difference, and that is the difference. And one thing I want to make sure those out there understand, the medications that you take for allergies, make sure it doesn't make you sleepy, because you might excuse that as, well, I took a Benadryl, it made me sleepy. But your lethargy, your sleepiness, may be coronavirus.
Oh, my gracious. So in the last few minutes that I have here, can you talk to me about some of the tools, the hardware that parents need to have, particularly when they see, the thermometers, and understand there's an issue related to the blood circulating tool that that you put on your finger. Can you give me a rundown of that?
Yes, absolutely. Wow, absolutely. So there's something called a pulse ox. And a pulse ox, hopefully you can find it online, but a pulse ox is a little device, and it kind of grabs your finger, your index finger, if you've ever been in an emergency room or even, a good old physical. There's a little thing that just grabs your finger, and we look at it, and it gives you your heart rate, which is your pulse. It also gives you your pulse ox, oxygenation. And this is where some people who have had a pulse ox understand that their oxygen was getting in the low 90s to the upper 80s. You should be breathing room air 96 and above. Okay, even those who have asthma, 96 and above. Anything in the low 90s begins to tell you that your alveoli, your respiratory bronchioles, are not functioning well. That's a sign. Don't wait till you're turning blue. Don't wait till you're very short of breath. So the pulse ox, you can get them at CVS, et cetera. Go online and get that. That's P-U-L-S-E-O-X, pulse ox. Number two, a thermometer. this is the time you get a thermometer. You have to invest. It's about $69. And it's the thermometer that you just kind of, you know, you aim it at the temple. You don't have to touch the person. And it's best not to, but you have that thermometer that you can just aim right at them, and it takes the temperature. Lots of the daycares and even places, stores, and I believe the TSA, many places, public places, are now checking your temperature before you are allowed to enter. Of course, you want to have soap. Even though we were into the hand sanitizers, yeah, that's fine, but good old suds, good old soap for 20 to 30 seconds, two or three times a day is recommended. Please, let's continue this hand washing that we do. You know, your phone number to your provider, to your primary care doc, always have that. I'd rather get 10 calls that are not necessary than no calls or the one call that is necessary. So I'm on 24/7. Even if I'm not in the office 24 hours, I'm in half days, but I'm always a phone call away. So that advice, even if you call the emergency room or many of the, you know, urgent cares. So you
what
have
about,
your phone
call. Well, quickly, yes. What about over-the-counter medications?
So you, oh, yes, please, I thank you for asking. So we usually grab something called Advil and Motrin, which is your ibuprofen. Please listen, Village, do not use that. That has now been associated with the common denominator that allows COVID to be aggressive. So you should do Tylenol, which is the best name is acetaminophen. So be careful with the Aleve, what we call the NSAIDs, the Aleve, the ibuprofen, and the Motrin.
Well, Dr. Marilyn Quarter, I want to thank you so much for your expertise and your dedication to the health of our community. I really appreciate you talking to us, and please stay safe.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. Take care. Be safe.
You too. Absolutely. Also, I want to thank Dr. Charles Barule from Children's National Hospital. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, May 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.